Ecclesiastes. Tonight we start the study of this book, a little bit of background on it. It was written by Solomon, as most commentaries believe, although his name wasn't mentioned. We will see in the first verse, you pretty well identifies him though. The word Ecclesiastes means preacher. It also means speaker before an assembly. It was written a little later in his life. We just completed the studies of Proverbs, and Proverbs was early on in his life, many believe. And now we're looking at a time in his life that he showed so much foolishness after he showed so much wisdom. It kind of causes you to scratch your head. What's going on here? Well, we're going to see as we go through this book a situation where the man has drifted away from the Lord. Foolishness has crept in place of wisdom, where he was very wise. Now, the wisdom didn't go away. It's just that he went away from God. Where we are strong, we are to watch out, because we tend to let our guard down, and the evil one hits us right there. You know, we think we've got it together in this area here. I've even made statements like, oh, you know, I understand that one. I'd never go there. Man, before you know it, there you are. What happens is that you pour so much energy and thought and focus in the area that you're weak, that you think the devil's going to strike you, and you realize that you have left that strong area by itself. Inspiration guarantees the accuracy of the words in Scripture, not always the thought that is expressed. And the reason I say this right here is that there's going to be some statements in this book that aren't necessarily truth. Solomon, or the writer, makes them, but it is not the truth. It is something that is the Scriptures inspired for us to chew on. We will see some very foolish thoughts given by Solomon in this text. The context should be considered anytime that happens, and attention paid to the person who made the statement and under what circumstances the statement was made. He was, speaking of Solomon, a man that was searching for truth in life apart from God at this point in his life. And there are a lot of people in the same boat today. I believe that the great glory that had been given him earlier in his life was now starting to fade. And as it faded, he went searching. What is really great about this book, though, is the ending. Now, I won't tell you how that ends because I don't want you to not come anymore. So we'll just work our way through it, starting out the first couple of verses. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Like most preachers, Solomon identifies himself as someone that has something to say. You can't make a good preacher unless you've got a lot to say. Vanities here speaks of emptiness. It is to waste life without any purpose or any goal. It means to live like an animal or a bird lives, you know. They are born onto the scene, they have a lifespan, life cycle, and then that's it. They just die. They become fertilizer or something. There are great many people who live like this. They spend their 70 or 80 years, if they're lucky, and they're healthy, and then they wonder, wow, what's next? There's nothing next. There was no aim. There was no goal. There was no purpose in life at that point. Vanity of vanities, he says. Vanity, all is vanity. is life without God. It is man walking and talking under the sun, trying to get something out of life. And he goes on there in the third verse, what profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? You know, the phrase, we're going to see this a lot, the phrase under the sun, it pops up over and over again throughout this book, and therein lies Solomon's problem. If you are looking for reality, if you're really looking for satisfaction or substance or happiness under the sun, you're in trouble. You've got to look a little past the sun. You've got to look into heaven to the Son of God to find real fulfillment, real purpose of life. One generation passes away, verse 4, and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. You know, life is just a vapor, and it quickly passes through. I tell you, it's an amazing thing how quickly life goes by. And I say that more and more the older I get. When you get on that, past that certain year, and you look back and say, oh, I remember my dad saying, oh boy, son, enjoy life because it's fading quickly. And now I'm at that age that he said that. It is going by fast. If man can do no better than what he has done outside of God, he's worse off than a tree. Do you realize that? A man, you see, a man gets about, what, 60, 70, 80 years at best? Well, there are trees right now that are alive since the time of Christ. So they've done a little bit better of a job, if that's all there is, longevity. The sun also rises and the sun goes down, verse 5, and hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes toward the south and turns around to the north. The wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuit. You know, I find it interesting that Solomon made these observations hundreds of years before science even knew that the earth was round and had wind currents and had vapor patterns, jet streams. This guy was like, what, 900 years before Christ or something like that? Ah. That's amazing. Science was, you know, the time of Columbus, that was 1492 or something. They finally figured out that the earth wasn't round. I mean, it wasn't flat and was round. So a lot of discoveries have been proved by the Bible, if only science would have paid attention. Verse 7, all the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, there they return again. You know, it's speaking about the vaporization process that the water system on earth goes through. You see, all through the Bible, we see science proved, or science never really contradicts Scripture, ever. They finally figure it out. Oh, is that what they were talking about? All things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. Verse 8. You know, the eye is never at its capacity. It's never overloaded. It never sees enough. The hours spent in front of a television, they rise every year. I see the polls, and I think it's something like the average child spends 7 hours or something, or the average adult, I don't remember which, but 7 hours in front of the television a day. I don't know exactly how they figure that out, but wow. There's a lot of... But yet, the eye is never full. There's always something new to see or something new to hear, isn't it? You turn on the news and whoa, I didn't know that, you know. No matter how much we take in, we still want to see and hear more. That's what Solomon's saying. Verse 9 and 10 say this, that which has been is what will be, That which is done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? It has already been in ancient times before us. You know, I have said this and thought it before. There's nothing new from man that has not been said or read. I teach things that have been taught before. There isn't a new insight. Now, I'm not discounting the fact the inspiration of the Holy Spirit in someone's life. It may be new to you, but it's not new to mankind. Over and over, scriptures are repeated, principles are repeated, and that's a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. But there's nothing new under the sun. There's no one new thing except for one, and that would be a new life, born in Christ, a new creation where God comes in a sinner's heart and renews that life. There is no remembrance of former things, verse 11, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. You know, man tries to be real important. He tries everything in the world to keep himself before the public. But it isn't long until he passes off the scenes, off the stages, off the front pages. But I challenge you, do you remember who it was? I mean, you know, the Super Bowl is a big deal. Tonight was the first NFL game, starts out the new season. Do you remember who won the Super Bowl 4 years ago? I do, but most people wouldn't. Do you remember who won the Best Actress last year? No. It doesn't matter. Time passes by, passes us all by. I, the preacher, verse 12, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. And I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven, this burdensome task God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised. You know, the preacher has confronted us with a situation that today, if you had to give it some big name, it would be existential. Man exists in a series of experiences and cannot discover any onward meaning in them. That would be the philosophical view. All he can do is exist and make the best of what comes or drop out altogether. Yet most people still believe that life has some meaning if only they could find it. The younger people have a hope to change the future. In his first mention of God in this verse, two verses here, he says that God has given something to man that he has denied to the rest of the animal world. And that is the constant, although often worrying, urge to make sense of life. You know, the animals don't worry about that. But man worries about that. I've got to make sense of this. Have you noticed? I mean, I grew up in the hippie age. And one of the greatest pursuits of a young person was how this world made sense to them. And they rejected that which was their past, their parents' past. And so they wanted to make sense of it, and they experimented in all kinds of ways, mostly drug ways, but all kinds of different cultural experiments. In verse 14, I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. John chapter 3, verse 6, Jesus said this, that which is born of the flesh is flesh, and that which is born of spirit is spirit. You know, no man born is going to do it all right. He is a sinner. He is a sinner, and he is broken from the get-go, thanks to Adam and Eve. Although we can't blame them We would have done the same thing probably. Needs new life. A man does. A woman does. The old cannot be made straight. You can't just figure out how to do it better. You can't just figure out how to be a good person. I hear it all the time, though. You know, I'm a good person. I can go to heaven. I should be able to go to heaven on my merits. Man, I'm glad I'm not trying to get in on my merits. I'm glad that Jesus Christ has said, come, get in on my merits. I offer to you. We go to college to get brain smart. We discipline our bodies to look good. We mold our outside appearance, but the same old wicked heart is still in there. Eastern philosophy will not change it. Praying five times a day will not change it. But God can change it through Jesus Christ. I communed with my heart, verse 16 says, saying, look, I have attained greatness and have gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge. And I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is grasping for the wind. Saying that he communed with his heart is another way of saying, I figured it all out on my own because I'm so wise and educated, you see. Solomon was, wasn't he? He was wise. He was educated. He was rich. He was the king. But he had gotten to a place in that life that he could not figure it all out on his own, and it didn't make sense. Life didn't add up. Many without God try education, try philosophy, and they come to the same end. It doesn't add up. This man had written books, many books. He had written poems. He had been everything from a botanist to an astronomer. For in much wisdom is much grief, he says. The very next verse. And he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. So the next time you're trying to deal with a highly educated person and they're talking about the importance of education, you might take them to this verse here. Joy and satisfaction do not increase in ratio to the increase of knowledge. What do I mean by that? Well, joy can happen all at once, but not knowledge. It's a steady, slow increase, and it encounters much grief along the way. People that pursue education, they find themselves frustrated at times because their soul is not being fed at the same time. The more we know, the more we increase our problems. Life has become more tedious, has produced more tensions. And all of our scientific gadgets, our techie gadgets about us, are making life even more frustrating. The faster the computers, you know, I had a situation, my email yesterday, it would not work. It did some of the weirdest things. I mean, I'd type and it would revert back to halfway in my paragraph, wipe out a few words, and then I'd hit enter and it'd go backwards from there. And pretty soon I tried to reboot it and it wouldn't do that. And you know, I wanted to take a sledgehammer and ruin my computer. That wouldn't have got me anywhere, but I couldn't do what I wanted to do, and so I just had to put it off. The faster the computers get, and the more that we rely upon them, the more of a burden of keeping hold of life. If it is all done on our own, outside of God, we'll burn up. That's what Solomon is saying. So let's get into chapter 2. He says, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure, but surely this also was vanity. Solomon, he abandoned his study of philosophy that we looked at in the last chapter, and his quest for education, and in order to pursue pleasure. He's going to talk about pleasure now. And the word mirth, if you're not familiar with it, it's happiness or laughter, joking. He said in verse 2, I said of laughter, madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish? He probably had a court jester that would come in and give the latest jokes. And I can see him now all sitting around laughing. But you know, the jokes, they get old after a while. They get retold. I could name a few preachers that tell old jokes. And the third or fourth time around, it's not funny anymore. They think it's funny. He found that it was just not funny any longer in view of life. Life's not to be joked around with. And he goes on and he says, I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine, while guiding my heart with wisdom and how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their lives. You know, the book of Proverbs that we just got done studying, we saw that his mother, there in the 31st chapter, had told him to keep away from wine, but he didn't do that. He tried it out. And many have tried out alcohol to soften their burdens of life. But all it does is, like it says in Proverbs, it comes back and bites you like a viper, like a snake. It just makes the burden heavier. I made my works great, verse 4. I built myself houses and planted myself vineyards. Here's another area that he tries. Hobbies. How many of us have gotten into hobbies to... invested time and money to the hilt? You go out. We came back from Eastern Oregon from Gary's place over the weekend. We came up over Mount Hood. And when we got to government camp, we were down to 2 or 3 miles an hour from government camp, clear down to Rhododendron, which is quite a little ways. It was packed. Camper, boats, motorhomes, all coming from the coast, all of them heading back to work because they played all weekend. Boy, we as Americans have invested a lot of time and money in hobbies. I made myself gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove, verses 5 and 6. And Solomon, he tried his experiments of irrigation and growing things. I love to grow things. Many of us in here do like to grow things. And there's pleasure in seeing how God has provided through the growth of plants and vegetables and trees and that sort of thing. This guy here, he really got involved with irrigation. In fact, some of the historical writings speak of pools that he had made that trapped millions of gallons of water, and then he routed them with irrigation canals and different things like that to feed different places. Gina and I went up to the horse area where he had his horses in Megiddo, where the horses were housed in their stalls and barns and sort of thing. And hewn out of the limestone, solid stone, was all these watering troughs, this system of watering troughs. And there was a deep water well down below. And we actually went down into the well and watched how they got it up there and fed all these troughs. I mean, amazing stuff, way before his time. So he had really put a lot of time and energy in this area. Goes on in verse 7. I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. I always gathered for myself silver and gold in the special treasuries of kings and of the provinces. I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kinds. So I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me." I find that's really interesting right there. Solomon was wealthy beyond any man's dreams. He was probably the wealthiest man that there has ever been. He had more than any man could say he had acquired. He tried things that others had never tried. But through it all, God still gave him wisdom. God didn't take that wisdom away from him. Even though he was declining, even though that we're going to see that he separated himself from God in a lot of ways, he still remained a very wise man. God still poured out his mercy upon him. And he will in your life too. I don't care what you've done, where you've been. God is full of mercy and God is full of grace. He did several things that he was told not to do. He wasn't to acquire horses, which he acquired many horses. He acquired much gold to the point that the silver was worth nothing. He acquired 700 wives and 300 concubines. He was quite a man. Verse 10, "Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. For my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward from all my labor." Success is a pleasure until man gets it. Pleasure was good for a time, and it is with us too. You know, we can, that's why we get involved in hobbies and do different things. That's why the temptations of certain things in lives become such a huge thing to resist, because there is pleasure for a time. We can enjoy the journey until we get there. Then we are not in the Lord's will. It becomes boring and meaningless. Workaholics, for instance, are usually very unhappy when they retire from work. There's nothing more to accomplish. What do I do with my time? And statistics will tell you that they don't live very long after they retire. It is the rich, it is the famous, it is Hollywood movie and TV stars, the folks who seem to have made it, that are the ones who commit suicide at a very high rate. Why? It's the meaningless of life. Life has a purpose, and we're born embedded in our hearts to search out what that purpose is. Verse 11 says, and I'm going to read a large section here because it kind of becomes repetitious and part of his overall picture of being just flat disgruntled with things. "Then I looked on all the works with my hands, what they had done, and on the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. Then I turned myself to consider wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do who succeeds the king? Only what he has already done. Then I saw that wisdom exceeds folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Yet I myself perceive that the same event happens to them all. So I said to my heart, as it happens to the fool, it also happens to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart, this also is vanity, for there is no more remembrance of the wise than of the fool forever, since all that now is will be forgotten in the days to come. And how does a wise man die? As the fool. Therefore, I hated life, because the work that was done under the sun was distressing to me, for all is vanity and grasping for the wind. Then I hated my labor in which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool? Yet he will rule over all my labor in which I toiled, and in which I have shown myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. Quite the mindset, isn't it? Looking at all that he had done, all that he had gained, there was a pleasure for a very short time. But then the light dawned on him, as it does most men and women that get to this point without God. For although he had been wise, he had worked real hard. He was a hard worker. He had educated himself. He realized he would eventually die just like the fool. He also thought about all that he had accomplished would just be passed on to a son that would not be able to surpass what he did and would maybe not even care. You see, the average person knows that he's not happy, that life is empty. But he thinks he's going to be happy as soon as he gets his next raise, his next girlfriend, or possibly his next degree. So he lives in hope of happiness. That's what keeps the world system going. That's why there's so much money spent on advertising to get your attention. That's the capitalistic viewpoint. I was talking to Gina about, you know, in Russia they had a social system. Well, you do as the government says and they provide your needs. You don't like the needs and you stop working, well, they'll throw you in prison. You know, and you'll go to labor camps. You don't want to labor, then they'll just kill you. So, you know, outside of God, life is pretty empty. I don't know how the world does it, but they do. So many of them do. Not so Solomon. He had nothing to look forward to. He was at the top. You see, there are many people that get there. Well, I shouldn't say many, but those that do get there, they realize, this ain't it. This isn't what life's about. Being at the top with all that I thought it would bring, it isn't it. You know, this book is interesting in that it fills in where the guy that has reached to the top, what does he think about? What awaits him? And the message is emptiness. I went through that time at once when I first read this book, and I asked myself, why did God put that book in the Bible? Well, for this very reason, that the man or woman that gets to the top, if they think that's what life's about, it's empty. There's nothing there. Alexander the Great, he experienced the same thing. At the age of 33, he wept because there were no more worlds for him to conquer. He had conquered the world. So on a wet, cold night, he got drunk. And he ended up acquiring pneumonia. And he died without purpose. You will be unsatisfied, my friends, with just a pursuit of a little more money, with a different lady, or a higher career move, or the next educational degree. It's all empty. Kind of a depressing picture at this point, isn't it? But there are many that get caught up in this pursuit of life. Therefore, he says in verse 20, I turned my heart and despaired of all the labor in which I had toiled under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is with wisdom, knowledge, and skill. Yet he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. He goes on, he points out that men who have worked hard to build up their financial security, and Solomon did work hard, often feel it unfair that everything should go to someone who has not earned it. as they themselves have done. And you've seen this story over and over. You see some of the millionaires, the billionaires, that have such a broken relationship with their sons. It is important to understand that Rehoboam, which was his son, who took the throne after him, had made a mess of the kingdom. He was the one that was responsible for the split of the north and south kingdom. He also was the one that was responsible for the kingdom to following into idol worship. And so it is true, it was going to be a process that brought about a great evil. Nothing is better for a man, verse 24, than that he should eat and drink and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. For who can eat or who can have enjoyment more than I? For God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who is good in his sight. But to the sinner he gives the work of gathering and collecting, that he may give to him who is good before God. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. So this is one of those places in this book that Solomon tries to say what is right, but he is completely wrong. He says nothing is better for a man to eat and drink so that his soul may enjoy all his labor. But without God, that is not true. You will end up in frustration because you are grounding yourself in this material world. And there are a lot of Americans caught up in this very thing, which does not hold the key to satisfaction either. He says, man, I have experienced it all. And he did. He says, I know all things. Well, a lot of things. But he did not experience what it is to walk and talk with God in a personal relationship, that God is first in his life. Jesus Christ says in Matthew 6:33, but seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. You know, nowhere do we see the preacher doing these things by asking God first. He concludes with a view that the good get things that are better and the sinners end up supplying those things to them. It's almost like an old age name it and claim it group. It's not true. 1 Timothy 6 says this, starting in the 6th verse, and it's great to read it throughout the end of the chapter, but 6 through 11 says this, now godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing, with these we shall be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare and into many foolish and harmful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But you, O man of God, O woman of God, flee these things, and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, gentleness. My friends, this is the way to live. And it is the most fulfilling to live also.